Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
A week from now, when this goes live, you and I will be in Indy at the Combine. It's going to be a brisk 35 degrees in Indiana in the winter, by the way, so I hope you're ready for that.
Yep.
But in the meantime, we have no shame when we rip off our friends, okay?
None.
I'm willing to admit a good format's a good format. And so we are stealing mercilessly from our buddies Trevor and Connor over at the NFL Stock Exchange podcast. They do this format called No Notes, where they each come up with a few questions for each other and don't tell each other what the questions are before they are asked. So you have to go into it blind with no notes, answer to the best of your ability. And I tend to think this format creates more honest answers in the moment. So should be
Are
fun
you
today.
Calling me dishonest, Coleman.
No, I'm just saying, you know, when you don't get a chance to formulate a diplomatic answer.
I know, see.
What's the phrase? It's like drunk words or sober thoughts, but, you know, for NFL draft.
Yeah, exactly. That'll be our title. Not no notes. We can't steal the title, too.
We won't waste any more of your time. We're going to get right into it. First blind question. This one's from me to you, EJ. 2004, long time ago, almost 20 years ago, actually. Actually, no, it literally was 20 drafts ago at this point.
Almost, huh?
I know. I'm fucking old now. My God. So 20 years ago in the 2004 draft, that was the record for most wide receivers in the first round at 7. Will this year's class break that record?
No. This year's class will not break that record. I don't even think they're going to tie it. They might tie it, but they won't break it. They will not break.
Do you have, and again, I'm not going to hold you to this, do you have an idea if they do tie it, who those 7 might be?
Yes, for sure. I mean, we're going to start off with Marvin Harrison Jr., Neighbors, and Odunze. And I have to tell you, I've dived into the mock draft pool. Started a few days ago. I'm just running them in between, trying to keep my brain fresh, watching all this tape. And the nightmare scenario that I think will come true that is relevant to this question is that Neighbors, Odunze, and Bowers are all off the board by 9.
And for Chicago, you mean?
Mm-hmm. Which would mean, ooh, you know, you can pick an edge, which is fine, but like it happens. I've probably run 8 mock drafts and it's happened in like 7 of 8. It happens very consistently. And you kind of sit there and stare at the board and go, okay, now what? Because that's what I was going to do. So you end up picking Jared Verse or Latu or trying to trade down if that's an option. But you're sitting there going, man, I really wanted one of those 3 guys. So again, Marvin Harrison Jr., Neighbors, Odunze. Who else do I think is going in the first round? Let me pull up my wide receiver.
You think Brian
rankings.
Thomas Jr.?
Brian Thomas Jr. is one of the guys I think could go at the end. I really like Brian Thomas Jr. There is some argument about his polish. I don't have those concerns in terms of other guys that could go. Troy Franklin is a name I hear a lot. a lot of speed. I know you put out a nice little tweet about his hands the other night. Good on you for stirring the
10%
pot.
10% drop rate, man. Like, it's not, I'm not saying he has the worst hands in the world, but like, we can't act like it's not a thing.
No, like, I understand that.
He's a 6'3", 185 pound receiver with a 10% drop rate. Like, come on. Yeah. Like, what are we doing?
It's a thing, and we need to pay attention to it for sure.
A.D. Mitchell? Let's
see. Not for me necessarily, but I could see it. I could see Leggett sneaking in at the bottom. I don't. Again, it's going to be dealer's choice for the teams that are in that range to say, is the fifth or sixth, or in your case, seventh wide receiver better than the first or second or possibly third player at a different position of need. And I think there's going to be better value. And that's what always happens when we have these debates about a certain position, whether it's wide receiver, whether it's quarterback, and people are like, oh, we're going to have more than five quarterbacks in a year. When you get down to that fifth quarterback, it's, man, is the fifth quarterback truly better than like edge three or DT two or center one, or if there's a great inside linebacker that year? That's what always happens, is the momentum just kind of builds to the point where people go, okay, hold up, I'll just wait till round two. That's why I say they won't break it. They might tie it. I actually don't think they will. I think we'll come in underneath that. I think it will be five, maybe six.
I would say six as well. Partially just because I think there's so many good receivers on day two that like teams are going to be able to justify, again, taking something else. Like, let's say Edger and Cooper's floating around, or, you know, let's say one of the good pass rushing interior defensive linemen, whether it's Johnny Newton, somehow takes a tumble, or Byron Murphy. You know, when you're comparing wide receiver seven to one of those guys, like, to your point, it's kind of like, I could go Malachi Corley next round to take that guy, you know? So I would say six as well. Obviously, the big three, Marv, Odunze, Neighbors. I have A.D. Mitchell at wide receiver four personally, which I know I'm higher on him than most people. That's okay. I'm willing to die on that hill. Brian Thomas
as
Jr.
Usual.
As usual.
As usual.
Brian Thomas Jr. I also see going that high. And then it starts to get tricky for me. Because it's like, at this point, do I think Tez Walker is going to go in the first round? I think if he had a really, really stellar mobile, he could have reminded people of the player he was a couple years ago. That didn't happen. So that's probably not where he's going to go at this point. Again, I'm not a huge Troy Franklin guy. Not that I hate Troy Franklin, but like, is he one of the 32 best players in this class? Not for me. Keon Coleman, I have some questions about. Xavier,
he's
Worthy,
another one
I
think could
about.
Go in the first. I actually think Coleman should be in my batch of potential. It only takes one team. I too have some reservations about him, but I could also very easily see one or two teams going, you know what he is? He's our new blank. And you know, whether or not we think that's true, again, it doesn't matter. It only takes one or two teams to say, nope, that guy's coming off the board. So he's in that mix for me at the end of the first round with Thomas and Franklin and these other names that are like, oh, you know, that next tier.
Can I throw one at you that I think goes 33 to Carolina, but could very easily go 32 to KC? And yes. This should terrify people.
Right.
Ladd.
He would be very good in either of those systems, although for different reasons. But yes.
I mean, for Carolina, like, they just need anybody who can separate, which is him. And then KC, they need anybody who can separate 10 plus yards down the field, which is him. So like, I think Ladd's a sneaky one to KC. That would be really, really tough to stop. All right. What's your first question to me?
My first question for you, of our six biggest pre-combine questions, who are a couple of players you think testing will help the most and a couple of players who you think testing might slow their roll a little bit?
I have to imagine Chop Robinson's going to, I mean, he's a Penn State edge, so of course he's going to have a great combine.
He's on my list.
the tape grade with Chop is going to be lower than a lot of the other top edges in this class, right? Like Verse has a much better tape grade. Latu has a much better tape grade. Dallas Turner is a much better tape grade. Braylon Trice, like you go down the line, he probably doesn't have one of the top 7 to 8 tape grades among all the edges in this class, but he is going to put on such a ridiculous show in Indy. There's going to be some team that's like, I can fix him. And it's going to help him a lot when it comes to where he gets drafted. He's going to make a lot of money next week. I would say, another defensive lineman, Chris Jenkins from Michigan.
Yep, he's on my list too.
His nickname at Michigan is literally the Mutant. Mm-hmm. Like he's doing Turkish get-ups with like 180 pound dumbbells.
Yep. 170.
He's insane. He's going to have a really good week, too. And then on the offensive side, I think Jatavion Sanders. I think Jatavion Sanders is going to test really, really well, assuming he's all the way healthy, which he should be by now. Yeah. But I think he's going to put up some pretty crazy numbers.
He's going to remind some people. He's a great one. Who are some players you think might stumble a little bit or sort of slow people's fascination with them when they go, oh, his arms are only this long, he only ran that fast?
Oh, man. This is, and again, I don't want to be like too negative about Troy Franklin every time I bring him up, but I really hope, you know, when he shows up there, he can tip the scale at like 195. I would take 195. I would love if he's up to 200 at this point. But if you roll out there at 6'3", 185, like that is really, really light, at least for that frame, right? And I would love to see him show up with a 195 to 200 pound frame and still run fast and do well in the drills and everything like that. But like his frame is something that's concerned me because physicality gave him a lot of trouble, last season. And I would love to see him be able to still do all the stuff he does well, which is run really, really fast and be really, really explosive with just a little bit more sand in the pants. Like I worry about him if he doesn't put on weight.
It's okay, Mom. He'll hold up. No, In regards to Franklin, he's going to run fast. I don't care whether he shows up at 180, 185, 195. We know he's going to run fast. There are certain drills that are going to be fascinating to watch for certain people. You talked about a high drop rate with him. For me, in terms of hands, I'm fascinated. I mean, popcorn riveted for Johnny Wilson's gauntlet drill.
Oh, like. It might not be kind to him. I don't know.
It might not. But again, there are certain drills. So on the plus side, you named a couple of mine. Chris Jenkins. Chris Jenkins is an odd player. Fascinatingly strong. He's only about 275. And if I said to you, do you have a use for a 275 pound run stuffer who's really good? Like at that, he's amazing. He holds up against much larger players because he is so freakishly strong. But like, I think a lot of teams would be like, wait, what? A 275 pound run stuffer, but
hey, man,
exactly what he is.
Even if he's just Morgan Fox, I'll take Morgan Fox tomorrow.
In a lot of ways, he plays like that. Chop Robinson was on my list. Dwayne Carter, the DT from Duke, I think is going to remind some people why he had such buzz a year ago. Malik Mustafa, the safety from Wake Forest, I think is going to fly. Miles Cole. Just in terms of measurables, the Texas Tech pass rusher, like he's gonna remind some folks like, oh yeah, he was actually bigger than his teammate who went really high last year. Okay. Mason Smith, the DT from LSU, is gonna put up some crazy power numbers. Chris Braswell, the linebacker from Alabama, is a ridiculous athlete. And I think a lot of people are sort of, again, Alabama's defense always stacked. Definitely some more high profile names on that defense who are going to get chosen before him. Combine is going to be good for him. It's going to push him back up into the spotlight. And Trevin Wallace, way down the board, linebacker from Kentucky, who is not going to have great measurables in terms of size, but is going to run like crazy and is super well built. But the biggest one, Kingsley Suamataya from BYU. Oh,
yeah.
He's going to crush.
Like, monster.
It's possible that as a 300-plus pound offensive tackle, that guy's going to run in the 4.8s.
I would not be shocked at all.
It's
like, honestly. Yeah,
he has been for the last 2 to 3 years a solid, described as a solid 4.9 guy at like 3, whatever he is, 15, 20. Like, and lots of people have been whispering, like, he has a legit shot at breaking into the 4.8s as an offensive tackle, which is a fascinating and scary thought. For minuses, it's a guy we've talked about a lot, Latu. Everybody already knows his arms aren't that long. I don't think he's going to run at the top tier. Like, he's not going to run like Chop Robinson runs. We know that.
No.
And I think some people are probably just going to, again, look at those numbers. People tend to do this. They take the combine charts and they go, oh, he was 11th in 10-yard split or whatever he's going to be, as opposed to the people who are just safe in their grades in terms of tape and, like, production. Because, again, it's not like these guys are growing at this point for the most part. The season ended a couple of months ago. They know how fast he is. They know how quick he is. They know how skilled he is. They're going to look at his numbers and go, yeah, we didn't expect him to test super well. However, he keeps whipping people's asses. But there, he will have some of that lowered shine just because people go, oh, man, his arms are only whatever they are, 31.5 or 32.5. And, you know, oh, his 10-yard was, like I said, 9th or 11th or whatever it is, even if those players above him are lesser players in terms of tape grade, when we talk about combine and combine results and what it does for people, he's one that might take a little shine off.
All I care about with Latu is he hitting a sub 7.3 cone? Like, that's yep, literally all I give a shit. Like, you know, if he hits a 6.9, okay. I've seen all I need to see. Like,
if he's
it.
Above the eliminators, and this is the way it is with a lot of positions, and we should say that there are elimination thresholds for certain teams on certain tests for certain positions. And as long as you come in underneath that, if you have a great tape grade, they're like, cool, I don't have to convince my GM that I'm drafting a historical outlier. So we're good.
My second question for you is a name that I already brought up, by the way, with somebody who could blow up at the combine next week, and that is Jatavion Sanders. We know him on this podcast. We love him on this podcast. You and I have been eagerly awaiting what he's going to run, because we think it's going to be really fast. My second question for you, though, is when all is said and done and he tests super well and he does great at the pro day and he's in the drills and we've heard he's going to interview great, we know that Brock Bowers is going to go in the first round. I personally think Jatavion won't go that far after him. And so my question to you, with that giant unnecessary buildup, plus or minus 40th overall pick, Jatavion Sanders.
Oh, man. 40th is really good, because most of the boards that I'm messing with right now have him at like 41.
Exactly.
So you're right there. You picked the perfect over-under line. I think because of the strength of wide receiver, people will be looking at explosive offensive threats, which he is. Absolutely. I just did my full study on him this week, along with Brock Bowers. So I was reminding myself of how great JT is, and really how close the gap probably is. People are thinking that there's this massive drop off, and there is a drop off, but it is not massive. Like, he is a very nice consolation prize as TE2 in this draft. And then I think there is a pretty big shelf after that. I think if you don't get one of those two guys and you wanted a tight end, you'll be waiting a little while.
There's like four guys holding pitchforks right now because they love Ben Sinnott so much. So
That's cool. Sinnott's a good player. I like him too, but he is not going to go anywhere near the range of Bowers or Jatavion Sanders. 40th overall. I'm going to go out on a limb and say, just because of positional value, lower, that he will go after 40. Not far, but after. Yeah.
If he goes in the 30s, his best shot, in my opinion, is going to be the Chargers or the Giants, who are at 37 and 39, respectively. And I know a lot of Chargers fans want Brock Bowers at 5.
Correct.
They're not doing it. They're not doing it. it's offensive line or it's corner.
That would be a great twosome, though, if they do go as predicted, OL up high, and they get Jatavion Sanders with their second round pick. Like, Chargers fans are going to be really happy after that happens, as soon as he hits the field, because he's a dynamic player. He's a playmaker. He's a threat. He'll be a lot of fun in that offense. Again, you now have an offensive coordinator that likes to feature tight ends, so he's going to get his targets. Like, that would be a nice sandwich. I would like that a lot, actually.
I know Chargers fans, they're going to be very upset when inevitably they take either an offensive lineman or a corner. Instead of Neighbors or Odunze, but like, I'm trying to prepare them for this. That's what's gonna happen. Okay. So
yeah.
Stop with the jersey swaps for Malik Neighbors. Like, it's not like if they were at 8, maybe at 5, no. Like, it's Joe Alt or pick your favorite corner or trade down. Those are the options. Which means if you want a tight end, which they need a tight end, it's round 2 or round 3. Which means Jatavion Sanders or Ben Sinat. So if you want to do jersey swaps, do one of those guys, because that's who you're getting, folks. Okay?
I love it.
By the way, not to do the clunkiest transition of all time, but if you're also a big fan of Jatavion Sanders or one of the four people in the corner who love Ben Sinat, you can draft either of them right now on Underdog Fantasy, because Rookie Best Ball is live right now. It actually started in early February. And so if you enjoy playing fantasy football and you're a draft fiend and you've been doing work on all these draft prospects and you think you can find the next Sam Laporta, who this time last year wasn't even being drafted, and Puka wasn't being drafted, and I don't even think A-Chain was going before like the last couple rounds this time last year. So if you have a keen eye for talent and you want to make some money off that keen eye for talent in rookie best ball leagues, again, those are going on right now. You can use either the QR code that's on the screen. You can use the link in the description, promo code bootleg. They will match your deposit up to $100. And you can also get access to a new depositor special, which this time of year is going to be NBA focused because there's no more football, unfortunately. But yeah, it's a fun way to kind of plant your flag on some of these rookies before they even actually get into the league. And I'm pretty sure that Jatavion Sanders is going very, very, very late. So if you love him, draft him.
Yeah, and do it before the combine, because once he goes to the combine and reminds everybody, that number's going to rise. Just plain and simple, that's going to happen. He's that kind of athlete. So question number 2 for you. Do you think the Bears will have a deal in place for Fields after the combine ends, or do you think it will take a little bit longer?
I think they might already have one.
Ooh,
I'm not
going
to lie. I think they've already taken calls. And
I
think
know they've taken
at the combine.
Calls, sure.
Well, yeah, we know they've taken calls. Like, we know for a fact they've taken calls. But I would say next week is polls posting up at St. Elmo's and taking everybody's final offers. And then they'll decide after combine week. But like, people are already trying. Like, teams are already trying. The only question to me is not if he gets traded. It's where he gets traded and what the price ends up being. I do think it could legitimately end up being a second-round pick. Mm-hmm. I just don't know what team's going to do it.
Very similar to my answer. I believe that is true already, that there is interest and they're gauging that interest. And next week is really the come one, come all, drop your chips on the table. Let's see what everybody's got. We'll ask for everybody's best and final, see what you got. And that's going to clear up a lot of things. It's going to clear up, obviously, Chicago's draft strategy. They're going to have more picks, whichever picks those are. They're going to have a focus that they are picking a quarterback. Other teams are also going to either still have need for a quarterback if they don't get Justin Fields and they're in the sweepstakes, or if they are the winner of that sweepstakes, they can then presumably take quarterback off their list of high draft choices and start surrounding him with talent if that's what they need to do, and they likely do for most of the landing spots. So I think they will have that offer. I think it will clear up a bunch of draft speculation, not only for Chicago, but also for the teams that... Well, certainly the team that wins, but the other teams that were rumored to have made a bid.
My theory, I kind of want to expand on this real quick.
Go ahead.
My theory for the top three teams that are in right now.
Oh, can I guess? Can I guess?
I'll let you go first. How about that? I'll see if I agree with your top three.
Okay. So Patriots, Falcons.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I got a weird one for the third that people don't agree with, but I've kind of been messing with it in my head and it's getting really hard to forget.
What's the third?
Giants.
Ooh.
I hadn't been looking at it up until about a week and a half ago. And like I said, I started messing with draft simulators and people. Okay, this is my quick PSA for draft simulators. Everybody says, oh, he'll never be there and their board's wrong. Yes. Yes, they are. They're all wrong. We know that. That's not the point. Draft simulators are to jump on and see where their boards are now, where the boards move to, generally what kind of runs happen as you go through whatever mock draft you want to do. One round, three rounds, seven rounds, I don't care. You're going to start to see, oh, hey, if I want a big, tall, fast wide receiver, I better get one by about 45 or they're all going to be gone. That's what draft simulators are really useful. And use as many as you can. I'm not going to say this one's best because they're all different. And they have that different valuation, and you can kind of mess with it and just sort of see where the flow goes. So I started messing with draft simulators, and some of them allow you to trade players. And so I was like, I started off with the basics. Yeah, he goes to New England. Fields goes to New England. Fields goes to Atlanta. These have been rumored for, you know, a couple of months now. They're logical destinations. Washington, but they've got the number two pick overall. They can get a quarterback another way if they want to. Like, they're just kind of, and I was like, who's the third? Like, things come in threes. Who's the third? And man, number six pick right there. Now, they're not going to be giving their first round pick for it. And yes, they still have a lot of money tied up in Daniel Jones. I get it. But I was like, oh, like big athletic quarterback that can really run, has a big arm. Like Table knows how to use that. He used it with Daniel Jones. His first season with Daniel Jones, he featured his legs to great effect and took the Giants to the playoffs when they shouldn't have won four or five games probably. And I was like, oh, like dark horse, like, huh, look at that. And I just haven't been able to forget it.
I would not be surprised if the Giants did it, just because I think everybody in that building, like Tommy DeVito was winning games that Daniel Jones was not winning, right? I think everybody in the building knows, like, okay, yeah, that's not it. He's not the future, right? But I also think there might be a little bit of a standoff right now between New England and the Giants, because the Giants are not going to take J.J. McCarthy at six. They're not going to take Penix at six or Bo Nix at six. And so they kind of want to see what New England's going to do.
Yes,
because their only shot at getting a quarterback at six is if somehow Jaden Daniels falls there, which is possible.
Sure.
But if New England's trading for Justin Fields, that signals, hey, we're taking Marvin at three. And then at four, like maybe Atlanta tries to jump up to four or anything like that. But like the only scenario where the Giants are even getting Jaden Daniels. So you could argue, you know, he's going to one of those two, and we just don't know which one yet. And obviously, of course, Atlanta's also in the mix. I would say Pittsburgh's in the mix.
Yes, they are.
I still think the Rams are like a dark horse, not because they need him right now, but just because they need a plan for the future, and they don't really have one, and they're not going to be in position to have one anytime soon because I think they're too good. So I would not be surprised if there's a little stare down between number three and number six in the draft right now to see which one of them takes Fields, because that could determine then where Marv goes, where Neighbor goes, where Odunze goes, and where Jaden Daniels goes.
Fully agree. It's actually not great for Chicago if he goes to New England, because most likely they're going to start the run of receiver, you know, a pick earlier. It doesn't really twist it one way or another. There's a lot of smoke about Pittsburgh, and I actually like the fit. It's not that I don't think that, you know, Pittsburgh is interested. They would probably have to pay more. Their pick is, you know, if it does creep up into the, you know, into a second round pick, a lot of people think it won't. But if there's four teams involved, it's going to. If there are four teams legitimately involved, somebody's going to a second round pick to get him. Because if you don't, then your options are laid out in the draft, or you got to be really comfortable with like Jacoby Brissett, who I think is a fine bridge and better than some people think, can play, you know, certainly mid-level starter football in the NFL. And, you know, that's what you're looking at, but that's what you're left with. You have to get Jacoby Brissett. If you're Pittsburgh and you're just, you know, the smoke about, oh, we're going to decide whether it's Kenny Pickett or Mason Rudolph. Like, really? You are? Okay.
I don't believe that.
I don't believe it either. It's posturing. And, you know, then what are you going to do if you don't, if you, you know, swing and miss on Fields? Then you're looking at second tier quarterback out of this draft, which they might be completely comfortable with. Or you take the big swing and go for Fields. But if there's three or four players involved there, like legit interest, it will creep up to a second round pick, regardless of what you think Fields is worth as a player. It's what people will pay for him.
All right, my last question for you. We talked to this player at the Shrine Bowl. He's a great interview. That interview's coming out soon. Edgerrin Cooper, Texas yes. A&M linebacker. Crazy athlete. Talk about somebody who's going to boost his stock at Indy. Like,
yeah,
he's going to test out of this world.
Yes.
Great dude. Probably going to be the only linebacker that even has a shot at going in the first round. Wouldn't be surprised if he went in the first round. But we also acknowledge this is not a great linebacker class. And so my question to you is Edgerrin Cooper the only linebacker, inside off-ball linebacker, that goes in the first two rounds?
I'm going to say yes, and fairly comfortably. Here's why. I don't think Edge is going in the first round. Just positionally, I think he's a great player. We talked to him. He is a stupid athlete. Like, he is so fast. I compared him favorably to JOK as an athlete, which is rare air. Like, I think JOK is a better athlete, but bigger, right? So he's gonna be in the JOK range athletically, but he's bigger. So great player. Love him. Somebody will need him, but I actually think he might go like middle of the second. And then you would be saying that like the next inside linebacker goes in the, you know, second 15 picks of the second round. I don't think that happens. Like, I do not think that happens.
The only one that might is Peyton Wilson to me.
I can see it happening. The only one with a shot. You're right. You're right. If it happens, he is the apple of somebody's eye. He is going to test crazy. We talked about this last week. He is 234 pounds. He hit 23 miles an hour on GPS in pads on the field this fall. That's nuts. That's faster than Tyreek Hill runs for the most part, like, or the same speed that Tyreek Hill runs, who is much lighter than he is. So yeah, Peyton Wilson is going to test crazily. And again, somebody, it only takes one team, but I actually could see Peyton being one of those players that like leads off the third round. Cause somebody's like, oh, Peyton Wilson's still on the board. Hey, we need a linebacker and he's pretty good. Edge Cooper, I do not think lasts to the end of the second round, but I think he might be the only player at inside linebacker in this draft that gets drafted in the first two rounds.
The highest range I could see Edge going is probably like Houston in the early 20s. That's where it starts for him.
Yeah.
But I agree, very easily could slip down to, I don't know, Green Bay at 41. Yeah. I could see... Mm-hmm. I can see Jacksonville at 48. Oh, God, Philly at 50. If he's there at 50 and Philly doesn't take him with what's going on in their linebacking core, there's no way they pass on him at 50. But that's a pretty wide range, right? Like 23 to 50 that you could go.
Yeah. No, I fully agree, and it's an odd class this year. There are a couple of guys, I would say two and a half. We talked about this. We joked about the 2.5 inside linebackers that are at the top of the rankings. And then, you know, there are other players that are talented down the board. I mentioned Trevon Wallace is a guy who's going to test really well. Cedric Gray from UNC I really like for certain things. I like Lufoccio from UW farther down the board. As if you need a pass coverage linebacker, he had one of the best pass coverage grades in the nation. Now, he's not, I would say, fully rounded, fully featured type of linebacker. But if you need that role in your defense, if you need a pass covering sort of will type linebacker, like, you could do a lot worse. So there are guys with skills, but they're not going to go high because of the devaluation of inside linebacker for the most part. And it's just not that strong a class. It's not like there's eight uber athletes at the top of the ILB rankings.
All right. Time has come. Final question. Hit me.
Okay. It is a three-part question, and it is questions about records. Do we break records for, much like you asked me about wide receiver records for the first round? So, do we break the records for total number of guys, regardless of position, running in the 4.2s for the 40?
Ooh. Ah, man, there's a lot of fast dudes in this class.
It's a lot of guys that reportedly fly in this class. So I would say we have the best shot we've had in a few years to break that number. Will we? Man, it's so tough. And I don't know, have you been following the ever continuing timing controversy about Indianapolis? They still haven't released timing details about how they're going to time, and a lot of agents.
Don't they do a combo manual laser?
They do, but there was supposedly going to be some shifts, and the details about that haven't been revealed, and we're almost there. And so people are getting a little bit nervous, and there's whispers that certain agents might tell their clients not to run at the combine because they don't have assurances and it might not be the best thing for them. So it's all fascinating intrigue. Like, I don't know. I think about this and I'm like, how hard can this be, right? Like, I think about international track, right? The purses in international track, the prize pools in international track are extremely lucrative. Like, you can make a very good living running international track. You can be a multimillionaire, right? They don't have timing figured out yet. I think they got a pretty good handle on how to time a running race, guy going from one point or gal going from one point to another. Like, it doesn't seem that hard. And in terms of what guys make in the 40s now, in terms of going up half a round because you ran a 4.2 instead of the 4.4 that everybody thought you were going to run, like, you're making money. You're making similar, we'll just call it prize money. It's contract money, but like, you can't like just take the world track timing system and the Olympic timing system and be like, hey guys, this is how it works. You know, so it always fascinates me that they can't get this figured out. But I think this year we got a really fast class. We have they've redone the track several times. It's supposed to be pretty fast. We saw some fast times last year. But as you said, there's just a lot of guys in this class that are reportedly super duper fast.
I did look it up, by the way, while you were talking. And since 1999, there have been 27 total sub 4.3 40-yard dashes. So we're looking at an average of what,
1.0 something a year? Yeah.
So I'd have to go through and look at like individual years. I'm going to say the record is probably like 3 in a year.
It feels like it.
I think we tie it. I don't know. Okay. I don't know if we have a push. 4. There's a lot of guys that are going to hit sub 4.35, but hitting sub 4.3 is like, that's a whole different.
There's
thing.
Still
like
every
like 100 at that level is tough.
There's still a collective gasp in Indy whenever a 4.2 time comes up on the board. People are like, whoa, because as you said, it's super rare. You see about one per year on average. So if we see 2, it's a very good year. If we were to see 3, which we might this year, we know of at least 2 guys that have run that in training. And again, training in the event, different things. It's very possible. I think we could, you know, tie or break the record this year because, yeah, look, guys get faster every year. We had this a couple of years ago with the next question I'm going to roll into, which was, the last question I'm going to roll into, I'll just make that my second question. Number of guys over 300 pounds running under 5 in the 40.
Oh, man. So just going through the interiors, I would say Byron Murphy probably does it. Chris Jenkins. Oh, no. Well, no, Chris Jenkins will be 300 plus. Michael Hall won't be 300 plus. Johnny Newton, no. Maybe I could see.
He's right around. We'll see what he weighs in at. Again, a lot of these guys might weigh in light, but it's going to come down to like offensive linemen who break five, and we had a bunch of those last year.
So that would be Alt and Olu, I think, could both do it. I think Tyler Guyton does it. Sumataya does it.
Does it for sure.
Amarius Mims might, which is crazy because he's like 340.
Yeah.
He's going to show up at like 340, but he still might do it.
Yeah.
I think Fuaga's a maybe.
Dwayne Carter could do it for Duke, and he's like 303 or 305.
Honestly, the one that I can't wait to see is, can Jackson Powers Johnson do it? Because if he does it, it's like, dude, all bets are off. I don't care how high you want to mock him. Like,
that just blows the lid off.
I don't give a shit. He could be an option at 9. I don't care.
It's true. I think we probably will see more guys over 300 pounds, over or right about at. I'm counting 299, 300, 302, all that, running 5 or lower in the 40, because those guys have really started to train in a different way for the event, and they're just insane athletes. So many of them. We see the power numbers, like the combined wattage power numbers for 3 lifts in their weight room, and you know they're totaling 1,300 watts or something for 3 lifts, and you're like, they're just a lot of big guys that can really move. That is superhero stuff. We're seeing, you know, front squats of 450, you know, back squats of 650, 700. Like, these are incredibly powerful athletes, and they come in, they don't, you know, these are not the sloppy 335 pound, you know, offensive linemen of years past who are like, hey, I never have to run the 40 again. 5'4 is fine. Right.
Yeah.
They're coming in fit with super low body percentage, you know, super low body fat percentage, and they are motoring down that runway in Indianapolis. So last one's a little bit easier. It's just a straight measurement number. Total number of cornerbacks over 6 feet tall.
Oh, man. 8? Is it maybe?
Because it feels like we have a lot. I think that number might be the highest ever, because you and I were talking about this when we were in Dallas, that, you know, 5 years ago, if you're like, oh, yeah, it's that corner that's 6'2", you're like, oh, I know the one.
Yeah.
And now when you go, oh, it's that corner that's over 6'2", you mean like the 6'4 one or the 6'3 one or the 5 that are 6'2 or like the 8 that are 6'1 or 6 foot. Like, there's so many tall corners. We've seen that transition that we heard was coming 3 and 4 years ago. Like, hey, if you don't have the greatest hands and you want to touch the ball, maybe you should play defense, right? Because you can make a really good living as a guy over 6 foot that plays corner, as opposed to being the 55th wide receiver in your class, right? At best. So we've seen that transition from wide receiver to corner. They brought their speed and their height with them. And man, I mean, even at Shrine this year, you looked around the field, there were multiple safeties at 6'2", 6'3", multiple corners over 6 foot. Like, there were entire defensive packages where the entire defensive backfield was over 6 feet, right? Including the nickel. And you're just like, okay, like, that's 4 or 5 6 footers right there. So I think we're going to see a record number of cornerbacks over 6 feet tall.
Just kind of going through, Kool-Aid will be over 6 feet. DeJean's over 6 feet. Wiggins over 6 feet.
Yeah, it's not hard to find
him. Terrion Arnold over 6 feet. I think Quinyon is 6 feet flat. There's a lot of them. Okay.
Right. That's the top corners.
There's a lot.
It used to be like, oh, there's this one guy that's 6'2", but then there's this really good guy who's super fast, but he's 5'9". Oh, is he corner 3? Like, a 5'9 corner right now, even if he's the best nickel in the class, is not going to be corner 3, because there's so much height, speed, and skill at that position now.
The mid-2010s. I can't tell you how many 6'2", 6'3 corners got overdrafted by 2 rounds.
At least.
Because Richard Sherman existed. Like, that, I can't tell you how much the success of that Legion of Boom era defense just rotted the brains of so many GMs in the mid-2010s that passed on very good, like, 5'11", 5'10 corners to get, like, Stanley John Baptiste. like that. That's what happened for years, and now we're finally getting a bunch of, like, actually really, really good corners that are that size that grew up playing 7-on-7, and they grew up playing receiver and then converted to corner because corners started making $20 million a year. So we're finally starting to see the effects of that, and defensive coordinators could not be happier.
Yeah, it's just to blow your mind completely, there's a guy playing in the HBCU Legacy Bowl at corner this weekend who's 6'4".
God.
And he's got good feet too. So, there's a lot of talent all over the board. A lot of it is very big, very tall, very fast. I don't care what position you're talking about. The combine is going to be extremely fun. We're going to be there. We're both going to be in Indianapolis this year. It's going to be a popcorn event. It always is. There will be numbers to pay attention to. Again, there will be numbers that are just fun and flashy, kind of like those summer blockbusters you go to that don't have a plot. It's okay. Just enjoy them for what they are and then let them go and get back to the film like you always do.
I'm not sure if we'll have an episode next week because we'll be at the combine running around doing stuff all over Indy. And then we fly out there and fly back on different days. You fly back on Friday. I fly back on Sunday. So I don't know if we're recording out there, but even if we don't, we'll get an episode in the can shortly after combine. So we might have a quote unquote week off, but not really a week off. Either way, hang tight. We'll be back very soon. Thank you all for watching and listening, however you happen to be watching and listening. And we'll see you all very soon.